But there's a lot of people today that have robust portfolios, prestigious jobs, that maybe they own a business that are white collar in nature. Maybe it's a legal, maybe it's marketing, maybe it's graphic design, tax prep. This is where AI is going to start annihilating businesses and wages.
Today, you're listening and watching another epic episode of the Charlie Shrem Show. We're together twice a week since 2019. We dive deep with some of Bitcoin and crypto, Web3, technology, those who really understand what's going on, to truly understand where we are right now in the world, in markets, in events, in crypto, and where we're going in the future. We kind of look back sometimes at stories about what happened in the past. And we have a lot of fun at the same time. Today, we're joined by an awesome guest, Brian Hunt, managing partner of Investor Place in Alta, part of the MarketWise family, a leading figure in the financial research and advisory industry. I think Investor Place is that company has been around since the 1970s in financial research. You study markets and you look from top down and try to understand like what's going on. Your career has spanned over two decades. You've been instrumental in helping guide investors through complexities that we have in financial markets, but also like when the political markets kind of all come together and kind of looking at energy when COVID came around. Every time there were major events over the last couple of years since we've known each other, I think 2020, whenever something like major happens or we're going through, like it was COVID or various wars that were going on or all the craziness that was happening over the last 4 years, we always had like a keen insight to where the financial flows were gonna be going. Like the plumbing, like this is where things are. These are the views. And you've always had this idea of, and you've written extensively about it, of making money amidst chaos. And that's kind of like when we go through these turning points, if you will, those are the times that we need to be focusing on the markets, not pulling back. But anyways, welcome to the show. It's good to have you.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Charlie. I'm a huge fan of your work and you personally. So thanks so much for having me on.
Amazing. I want to dive right in. You wrote this phenomenal document, Metcalfe's Law, Follow-Up on Hyperscale. And you kind of get into understanding that there's this cycle and that all these major companies that have fundamentally changed everything, Facebook, Uber, Amazon, there's a cycle where the users are actually the ones creating the exponential value. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. You look around at the companies that are worth the most in America today, who are the most powerful people, the richest people. And, a lot of them are at the big tech companies. Sometimes they're called the Magnificent Seven, Google, Facebook, Apple, companies like that. And most of them got to be so large by exploiting an economic and technological phenomenon that did not exist for most of American history. Some people call it the network effect. Some people call it Metcalfe's Law. The network effect, it occurs when each user of a service of a communication network or a social media network, each user increases the value of the network in an exponential way. For example, the telephone. If you have a telephone, we're going back generations, back to a telephone network. If you and three of your friends are the only people with a telephone, that telephone network is not worth very much. If double the amount of people get telephones, the network becomes a lot more valuable. It's not just a linear increase in value, it's an exponential increase in value of that telephone network. And so that's how, AT&T and the telephone companies got to be so valuable. Fast forward to the modern day, you have Google or Facebook. They kind of get popular because they're popular. Google is one of the greatest business models of all time.
Yeah.
When it was small, it wasn't that valuable. And then they kept adding members of the network, and that made the search results better. When the search results get better, more people want to advertise, and it creates this flywheel effect, and these things just explode in value 100x, 500x, 1000x, faster than anything we've ever seen before. 50 years ago, we saw some companies exploiting the network effect, but nothing in the zip code of something like Facebook or Google.
How have it failed in the past, though?
Well, the really big driver of the network effect in our lives has been the internet, ubiquitous connectivity. companies were able to get their products and services to people in a much faster way than ever before. And then fuel was poured on that fire with the invention and the proliferation of the smartphone. So you're able to get your products and services and your advertising into the hands of somebody when they're in their car, when they're waiting for coffee at Starbucks. This ubiquitous connectivity means that a company can get its products and services and its advertising to you at light speed. So the internet really
changed everything.
Yeah, the internet really kicked this off. The smartphone just poured gasoline on the fire. And so now we have this business model that didn't exist for most of American history, human history, where you have a company that one day it's worth $1 billion. And then 2 years later, it's worth $100 billion. We'd never seen that before.
We're seeing companies go that route within a couple of weeks or months nowadays in this world.
Yeah. Yeah. The time it takes to reach $1 billion or $10 billion in market cap is just in a bear market. You know, it used to take over a decade. Now companies are doing it in a year. It's wealth creation at warp speed.
It seems like, especially in the last year and a half, the mantra of don't bet against the Fed has kind of worked.
Yeah. Everybody's obsessed with what the Fed is doing, and there's smarter people than me watching what they do, but the Fed has an impossible task, really, because their partner in the financial equation, the Congress and the executive branch, won't stop spending money. So you have these insane deficits, these insane debts, all that money sloshing into the economy. And even though interest rates are higher than they were 3 or 4 years ago, they're still not high enough to slow down the speed of development of these technologies. And crypto as well, you know, crypto networks, when growing at 100 to 200% a year, who gives a shit if rates are at 1 or 5? It's really not slowing it down.
The crypto bull market in particular, and the world bull market, almost feels like it's trying to go forward, but there's someone with a rope tied to our back trying to slow it down constantly. That's kind of how it almost feels like. It's like we want to run, and that's why the stock market, wherever it is, scares me a little bit, because that continues, but that's also muted. But you're right, development, if we don't look at the markets and like we just look from like a bigger picture, human development since 2019, 2020, only in 4 years, like we've jumped leaps and bounds, you think?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, something that works hand in glove with the network effect is exponential technological progress. You know, Moore's Law. Our computers are getting much more powerful, much faster, while at the same time getting smaller and cheaper. You know, after years of compounding, you know, we're getting these exponential increases in computing power, which have butterfly effects across the entire world, where the world is changing at rates that most people don't understand, because for most of our lives, change occurred at a linear pace. And it's just more manageable. But now the world is changing at exponential rates. For example, when ChatGPT was released in late 2022, everybody lost their minds. Oh, this is so cool. This is so big. Well, the version of ChatGPT that came out a year later was way, way more powerful than the one that the initial. And the one that's going to come out 6 months from now and a year from now, those are going to make the initial AI applications look like VHS tapes. We're having this insane rates of growth and innovation. AI is just going to speed it up even more. And so we have this exponential progress that's taking so many people by surprise. It's leading to new industries growing to huge sizes faster than ever while demolishing old industries. And it's also really driving wealth inequality. I think this is something that's lost on most people. Most people are broke and upset, and they're wondering what the hell's going on. Meanwhile, you've got guys like Jeff Bezos, you know, that he makes more than in 1 second than most people make their whole lives. Like, what's going on? Why is this wealth inequality so bad? And I believe exponential progress is a big culprit of this, because it's just
people can't keep up.
They can't keep up. They can't understand it. They didn't grow up in an exponential world. They grew up in a linear world. So the financial laws of physics and technology have completely changed in the last 10 years.
So I feel and see that in my day-to-day world, and it's slowly getting worse. The wealth inequality and the frustration between the haves and the have-nots, because everyone kind of lives amongst each other. And I'm trying to figure out where that specifically leads, because there are millions and millions of people, especially in this country, who have been successful in the last decade or so, running home service type businesses, painting companies, all these things, who are now all of a sudden finding themselves 1 year making a couple hundred thousand dollars. Now they're not making barely even 100 because businesses are just changing with AI, and it's just changing so quickly, technology. And so you're right, people are left behind. And there's no one more frustrated than someone who's had it and doesn't have it anymore. So what happens? Like, how do they catch up? Is there a business model in now helping those people catch up?
I wish I could tell you that I think it will get better. I believe it will just get worse because of AI. You know, quantum computing is on the way. Without getting into the boring science of quantum computing, it's just, they're supercomputers that are more than 1,000 times more powerful than today's supercomputer. Those are starting to go live to have commercial applications. The progress there is going to be astounding in the next 3 years. Probably lead to the development of artificial general intelligence, which, you know, if you know how to shingle a roof or lay a hardwood floor, or if you're a world-class plumber, I think that's a good spot to be in the next 3 years. But
tell me why.
Because robotics and AI, as advanced as they are now, you're not going to have a robot come over and do your plumbing for you for a long, long time.
No, definitely not.
But there's a lot of people today that have robust portfolios, prestigious jobs, that maybe they own a business, that are white collar in nature. Maybe it's a legal, maybe it's marketing, maybe it's graphic design, tax prep. You know, this is where AI is going to start annihilating businesses and wages.
Yeah. You know,
these today are some of the most valued jobs in America. You know, if you're the top legal guy in your town, you know, you're one of the big shots in town. Well, AI is going to annihilate some of those businesses because it will just be able to, you'll have one lawyer doing the work of 10 lawyers. You know, like, the legal profession is not going away. It's going to be there. It's just, it can be performed by less people.
Leverage. Yeah.
So I believe wealth inequality is going to get worse because the tech is starting to speed up at rates that very few people understand. The morons in Washington, D.C. definitely don't understand it. They're not going to be able to regulate it away. And so, yeah, I think this will lead to more and more people not being able to afford a car or a house, very upset. Meanwhile, they look at Instagram and they see tech entrepreneurs, you know, making hundreds of millions of dollars, and you'll have very loud cries for universal basic income. So
yeah, we already started it. We already saw it start in, you know, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I think that's where it's leading. You know, there's still going to be prosperity, lots of prosperity in America, if you have the right set of skills.
And yeah.
But if, you know, and if you're 25 and you're a software coder and AI puts you out of work, you have time to retool and relearn and learn a productive skill. But if you're 60 years old and you've spent your whole life pressing a button, or you're able to do something that AI can replace and you're 60 years old, that's a really tough spot to be in. And
yeah,
and that you're going to have a whole group of people in that camp.
Not a whole group of people. I mean, that's the reason the Chinese economy is going to be on a downturn, is that their population is getting older. Europe is getting older, but so is America. I mean, I live in Florida. Every person I know supports their family financially in some way or another. It's just mm-hmm. the way you do it. You know, no matter how wealthy you were back then, there's no way you could have figured out what the cost of living is going to be unless you're like super wealthy.
Yep.
And so is that another issue? Like, are Americans going to be held back because they have to financially and time support the older generations, or can that be solved with technology too? Can we solve that problem too? And then now it makes our economy even better because we're just solving these big problems with technology. I just wanted to go that way. I'm such an optimist, but it ends up not a lot of the times.
Yeah, I'm a raging optimist, but a raging optimist on businesses and people on the right side of this epic change. A lot of people aren't. But, you know, let me say one thing about the demographic decline in China, Japan, Europe. You know, the U.S. has a lower birth rate than it used to, but it's making up for a lot of it through immigration. But take China, Japan, and Europe, you know, which their demographic problems are well documented. They're not having enough babies to replace people dying off. And there's a lot of people making a big deal about this. But something that confuses this issue is robotics and AI. You know, Japan is the world leader in robotics innovation, you know, and a part of it is because their demographics are absolutely terrible. You know, they need workers to replace the aging people. And so AI and robotics together is going to inject billions of productive, air quotes, workers into the economy over the next decade. So I think that's going to complicate demographic declines, you know, the much ballyhooed declines that China's facing and Europe is facing. You're going to have billions of new workers enter the workforce. They're going to be called robots or AI programs.
So these like cutting edge technologies, I guess we can invest in them if we're sitting on the sidelines, you know, AI robotics, different type of applications, softwares, different type of like companies. It's always interesting. It's like someone gave me an exercise and it said, if you invested in every company where you've used the product for more than a couple of years, where it's become part of your like life routine, you'd be wealthy. Just like invest in things that take up your daily life. And so those are going to be the companies that end up taking over our daily lives in the future in the next 5 or 10 years. How do we spot them?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Peter Lynch, you know, brilliant investor who was also very good at writing down his thoughts and teaching people. And Lynch was a proponent of exactly what you just said. Look at things in your life that products and services that you love and see if there's an investment to be made there. You know, if you absolutely love going to Starbucks and you spend, you know, thousands of dollars there a year, maybe you can invest in Starbucks. Same with Google or Amazon. You know, Tesla has raging fans that have made a lot of money in the stock. So yeah, that method, the Peter Lynch method of buying what you know, buying what you see, whether it's in the mall or whether it's on your phone, is a great idea, I believe. And I mean, Amazon is something most of us are, you know, we're Prime members, we use it. It's changed shopping completely. There could still be a lot of runway for Amazon to grow and grow and grow.
Even these big incumbents, they have the more incentive to change.
Yeah, I think Amazon has more upside. Google has upside. For someone that is really into crypto, you know, Coinbase is a company that employs the network effect. And could that have a lot more upside? I don't know nearly enough as much about the crypto market as you do. Or, you know, online marketplaces like Mercado Libre is similar to Amazon that operates in Latin America. So there's individual companies that people can look at. Of course, crypto, you know, employs the network effect massively. And you know all about that.
Let's talk about crypto for a second. What I need to figure out, I don't know this answer, is that you have something like TikTok or social media. Take social media, for example, as an industry, but also as a technology and why it's worth so much. The social media, whether you use it for work or for fun or for any other reason, it's part of your like daily life. It's in your routine. It's the coffee machines exist as an industry. You drink coffee every day. It's part of your life routine. Crypto, for as big as it is and as big as it's gotten, it's still not part of people's daily routines yet.
Yep.
And so I know it'll get there. It's funny because someone the other day told me what you said. It's like when someone famous, well, I don't want to say that yet because the listeners, I want them to get there. But how do we get it part of people's daily routines? And I don't know this answer, but I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. Without being an expert in that field, something that seems to me that would be the game changer that would get it onto the phone and onto the minds of the average Joe is is tokenization of assets. The world has already gone there in the last 3-4 years where, you know, we're tokenizing private investments. But when are we going to have exchanges with lots of, with millions of people on these exchanges being able to buy and sell fractional ownership of assets such as homes, cars, when is there going to be the tokenized equivalent of the Green Bay Packers? You know, the Green Bay Packers is a sports team. They're owned by lots and lots of people. They have that fractional ownership. But when is that day coming? Because I believe when people can get really into buying and selling assets on tokenized asset exchanges, you and I have talked about this, is when's the day when you can do a public offering of your own earnings potential? You know, can I buy shares in Charlie Shrem's earnings potential? I think that's going to be something that will just set the world on fire. You know, of course, there's regulatory frameworks to work out, but I'd love to hear your take on how far away we are from that, because that seems like something that the average Joe, you know, could get really into.
The idea of like a single person going public, almost like in a way. And if there was like, if you're like a sole proprietor, going back to like the home services business, you fix gates for a living. There's a lot of business in the gate business. I know this because my friend, guy makes $500,000 a year fixing gates. And he wants to hire more people. You know, the SEC and the stock exchanges, they'll never be a world where the single person can do that, because there's so much centralized concentration and overhead. But when you have a decentralized industry where the different parts of that process can be like outsourced, and the revenue and the fees. And I guess what I'm getting to is we need good regulations. That's really what it is. Like, the technology is there. I've been saying this for a while. We almost had a step in the right direction with SCB 121. That would have changed some accounting practices. But we're going into the age of chaos. Maybe crypto is not the voting block that we see it is right now, but it really is. And you're going to see that come December. You'll see that come like this election season. And even after that, crypto will establish themselves as like a major player in the new administrations. Wherever that falls, you'll see crypto be a big part of it. And then we'll see like it'll burst open because the technology is built and there are people using it and spending time. But it's all like very hard to use still and muted. And it's scary because you need consumer protections. If that home service company, if he goes public in crypto in an easy way, but there's like established bankruptcy protections, for example, if that person fails and you set it up where that the people can't have massive fraud, that's what we need. We need like good regulations that give consumers protections and allow people on both sides to feel comfortable being a part of the equation, the demand and the supply. We're not there yet. We're still, I think, that one election cycle away from that. That's my opinion. But that's a lot of people's opinions too. So I think we're getting there.
Well, what I would love to see is, so now you have millennials and Gen Z. They're now a larger voting block than the baby boomers. You know, they don't all show up to vote. You know, old people show up to vote. Exactly. But if we could get a lot of these young people that are very upset about feeling like the system has let them down, they can't afford a house, they can't afford a lot of things that they felt like they were promised, and they see the system as a failure, I'd love to see this group of people, this big voting block, start to agitate for change, for lowering the gates, you know, the demise of the gatekeepers, which you and I have talked about for years, is, you know, so many markets are controlled and they're corrupt, they're opaque. You have these gatekeepers. And so let's get that voting block of people voting for change and getting these regulations in place, because there's a lot of inequality and there's people that are very pissed off about it. I don't blame them. So let's get to the voting booth and make some changes.
I'm ready. I'm ready for it. I'm ready. That's a great way to get out the vote, get up and vote. I haven't read any statistics about it, but I just have a feeling, and call me on it after November, but I feel like this will be one of the largest turnouts for Americans voting in like a presidential elections. I'm making this up. This is my feeling though.
Yeah. But one thing we've got to get to your listeners, Charlie, you'll like this meme that I saw yesterday, is idolizing a politician is like thinking that a stripper likes you. So you can go ahead and vote for these people, but don't ever forget they're largely corrupt. I believe the level of corruption in American politics today is off the charts. So
it's worse than it's ever been.
Yeah.
I follow screeners of a lot of I just follow screeners of stock portfolios of different congressmen and senators. It's crazy. I mean, the Pelosi tracker can beat out any hedge fund. Some of these politicians down here in Florida, I mean, the corruption, it's sad for you to say that because you've been studying this longer than I have. But I'm hoping that it's like a whipsaw type of approach that maybe we'll see less corruption in the future. I don't know. It just seems like it's getting worse, worse and worse. But we're going to be in the age of chaos. A lot of people can make a lot of money if they're not afraid. And a lot of us are afraid sometimes, you know. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. Everyone, go to investorplace.com. Check out the different reports, writings, great programs there. I've worked for the company for 4 years now. Most grateful, best opportunities ever. And you guys know we have the phenomenal Crypto Investor Network. My listeners come over to me all the time and say, hey, I'm part of the Crypto Investor Network. So for those listeners who are, I love you guys. Thank you so much for being loyal members. And it's been fun riding with you guys through all of the bull markets and now the bull market again. See you later, Brian. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Charlie. Talk to you soon.